Hello and welcome to episode 48 of A Little Bird Told Me. My co-host Philippa and I are two freelance writers on a mission to help you avoid the pitfalls that plague freelance writing, and we're here to help you become the most wonderful wordsmith you can be. Freelancing can be really difficult, so this podcast is just a little ray of sunshine in a world that can be pretty mean. You can find yourself working from bed, eating food from the packet for lunch and not seeing anybody for years on the trot. To make sure that you don't miss the next episode of this lovely podcast, we've made it really easy to subscribe. You can tune in to us via iTunes, RSS feed, Stitcher Smart Radio, or just on Podomatic. So no matter how you want to listen, do make sure you stop by the Podomatic homepage, and that's at alittlebirdtoldme.podomatic.com. And you'll find a whole range of links, resources, exciting things, all there to accompany the episodes. You don't want to miss it. So you'll find links there too to my social media profiles and websites and those of my lovely co-host, Philippa. I'm Laurie Hartshorn.
And I am Philippa Willits. And we want to start by apologising for the lack of podcast last week. Once in a while, we just can't fit it in. We both sometimes have a week where we both have an incredibly busy schedule, and last week was one of those. So we hope you didn't miss us too much. No, actually, we hope you did. But there's always our archives if you're missing us during the week.
Yes, you can tune into one of our older episodes and just reminisce about the time we were there with you Tuesday morning every week. I think we've missed two so far out of the almost 50.
Exactly. We're doing pretty well. And the thing with the podcast is it does take up a surprising amount of time with planning and recording and editing and transcribing and all that stuff. So, you know, it's quite an investment of time that we put in. So sometimes, unfortunately, we just can't. But we're back now, and I'm sure you're incredibly happy at that.
And extremely relieved, as we are too. We've missed you too, podcast.
We have indeed. Now, today, what we're going to look at is something on the business side of freelance writing, which is how to prevent your freelance business from wasting money. In many ways, there aren't that many outgoings, you might think, initially. As for a freelance writer, you might think pens and paper and broadband, basically, but actually the expenses that you need to spend out on can add up a bit, and we're going to look at ways to make sure you're not wasting money and that you're not missing out opportunities to save where necessary. But we're also going to look at areas where you shouldn't scrimp and where you do need to invest a bit.
Yeah, I think it's a really important topic, because as a freelancer, your business and your personal spends can be quite intertwined, because you are your business.
Yeah, I know, you know, if I buy certain magazines, then they can be business expenses because they're research for magazine pitches. But I also quite like to read them.
Yeah, I mean, as I say, you are your business. You are the freelancer. There's no external organisation. So you really have to look at saving money across the board when it comes to saving money for your freelance business. A good thing about being a freelance writer, as Pip's just pointed out, is that your overheads can actually be quite minimal if you're sensible with your money. You're unlikely to have separate premises to maintain. For example, you probably don't have an office outside home. Your travel costs, they could be quite low because you're not commuting every morning. You probably don't have employees. You probably don't need great swathes of equipment in your house, in your office, wherever. It can be quite a slimline career to have if you're sensible about it. Now, what we're going to do during this podcast is look at a variety of ways to save money. And that's going to include things that you can get for free, things that you just don't need to pay for at all, or things you do without. Things that you need to pay for, because some things that you just do have to fork out for, but you can get cheaper.
Yeah.
And false economies. So things that you think you're making saving on, but you're not.
Yeah, definitely. Now, the first thing we're going to look at is software. There are quite a few software options for freelancers, and kind of obvious one is Microsoft Office, that a lot of freelancers who use Microsoft Windows might think they just couldn't do without. How on earth can you run a freelance business without Excel and without Word? But actually, if you buy those, if you buy the license to use that software, it can really add up.
Yeah.
Plus, as software, it's quite bloated. It takes up, it's resource heavy on your computer.
Yeah.
And there are actually some really good quality options, alternatives that are completely free. And one of those is something that Laurie and I use on a several times a week basis, which is Google Docs, Google Drive. You can use Google Drive to create web process documents, spreadsheets. You can do research quizzes and get people to fill it in, and it all turns into a big spreadsheet. You can make forms. You can even do drawings on it and store it all in the cloud, so you're not reliant on, you know, what if your computer breaks down? It doesn't matter because it's stored by Google rather than on your local machine. The other main option that I have always sworn by until I very recently had to make the switch to Windows 8, and is OpenOffice, which is another suite of very good software that is an excellent Microsoft Office equivalent. Unfortunately, at this stage, OpenOffice isn't working well on Windows 8.
Oh, what a shame. It's compatible with everything else, isn't it?
Yes, and I'm sure in time it will do. But because Windows 8 is a relatively new operating system, at this stage lots of software isn't compatible with it.
Mm-hmm.
So for the first time in years, I'm finding myself using Microsoft Office most of the time rather than as an occasional thing. And I do miss OpenOffice, but it was just full of bugs on Windows 8. So if you're listening, OpenOffice, sort it out. But yeah, in general, if you're not using Windows 8, then OpenOffice is a really good alternative. It does most of what Microsoft Office can do. It can open all the Microsoft file types. And it also takes up less resources on your machine.
And it does mirror, the interface does mirror that of Microsoft Office.
Very much.
You'll know how to use OpenOffice.
Yeah. Yeah.
There aren't many differences at all. I think there are a few things you can't do. I think track changes is one of the things.
OpenOffice has its own version of track changes, but it's not that compatible with Microsoft Word. So whereas most things you could do in OpenOffice and someone else could open it in Word and never know that you'd not used Word yourself, track changes doesn't transfer that well to Word. So if I'm doing proofreading, I do tend to use Word for that. Microsoft Word, yeah.
So the next thing we're going to talk about is training resources. Now, with the costs of education skyrocketing, it's important to keep your training up, but it could bankrupt you if you try and do it with paid-for education.
And even out of the education sector, I see places that run business training events that you might go to a morning of how to use Twitter, and it's charged at £240.
Yeah.
You know, for a 3-hour session. That is a lot of money when there are, as we're going to explain, more than enough free equivalents available.
Yeah. I mean, in our planning document for this podcast, we have a whole range of things to talk about, ways to save you money. So we are going to zoom through things a little bit. But all the information that we give you here, we'll pop it in the show notes. And if there's anything that you hear us talk about that doesn't end up in the show notes, you can come and have a chat to us and say, oi, where's that thing gone?
Absolutely.
Now, some of my favourite resources for writing-related training, we've mentioned it before, OpenLearn by the Open University. That's a range of free resources that you can use. There are a variety of subjects on there. Some of them not quite so technical, but I like their fiction stuff. I like their poetry stuff. I do a lot of fiction editing, so it's very, very handy for me there. Alison.com is one that both Philippa and I use.
It's varied, but when it's good, it's good.
Yeah, when it's bad, it's horrible. But we've just redone it, I think. the interface has changed. It's a lot more user-friendly than it was even quite recently.
Oh, that's so, good.
Yeah, if you've been on Alison.com, say, 6 months ago and you thought, what is this horror? Do have another look, because it's worth a nosy. They've got all sorts. Again, my emphasis tends to be on the fiction, but they've got literature analysis, fundamentals of English grammar.
And also business-related courses. I've done various marketing-type courses on there.
Yeah.
Another
stuff as well. Social media things.
Another really good resource that is overlooked is actually YouTube.
Oh, really?
Really,
as if I've never heard of YouTube.
Yes, it's a video sharing website. lots and lots of universities are putting their lectures up on YouTube for free. But also, if you just want to learn a specific thing, it can be a complete lifesaver. I was trying to do something in a spreadsheet, and I couldn't make it do the calculations I was trying to make it do. And I read every guide on the internet and couldn't get there at all. And then I looked on YouTube, and there was a guy who, in 45 seconds, demonstrated exactly how to do what I was trying to do. And there we were. It was fixed because I'd watched him do it. So you get everything from the 45-second fix to a specific problem to now the kind of 16-hour journalistic ethics course that I'm doing from UCLA. So it's while you think of kittens and dancing dogs for YouTube, it actually, it's the world's second biggest search engine, YouTube. And it is full of information that you might need.
It's funny, I've never really considered it as a training resource. I've used it once for training, and that was to learn how to use audio editing software.
Yes.
But I'd completely forgotten about it, and I'll definitely be going and having another look, because I hadn't quite realised that it was so widespread now in terms of training material.
It seems to be, I mean, it's always grown at a rapid pace, but... The quality, the good quality stuff seems to be expanding quickly.
So, brilliant, YouTube. In terms of more written material, although they aren't strictly training resources, how-to sites and encyclopedia sites can actually be really, really helpful. Sweet 101 is one of my favourites.
Yeah.
And it's just a knowledge share site. Similarly, WikiHow. It looks a bit no frills, but the information you get on WikiHow is very, very good, and it tends to be, as we mentioned in How to Write for Beginners and Experts a couple of weeks ago, it tends to be numbered or bullet-pointed information, so it will walk you through something you don't know how to do very simply and easily.
There's a website called Quora as well, which is a question and answer site. And what makes it different from maybe Yahoo Answers and other types of question and answer sites is that somehow it attracted the best of the best of the best. And so people who ask a question will get detailed responses by people who are really high up in their field. And then you can vote up and down on the responses and all that kind of stuff. But you can do a search of Quora and find out if anybody's already asked what you want to know. Or if they haven't, you can ask your own question. And so that's good for a kind of one-off bit of advice. But also, I'd imagine with a bit of creativity, you could almost compile your own training document by working your way through a particular category in Quora, because they are so full of top information.
That sounds fabulous. About.com is all I think, not a question and answer site, but it is equally, you know, full of really, really good information.
Yeah.
Some of it's not so well written.
But it does vary. There are a million different sections, aren't there? And some seem brilliant and some seem quite lacking. But if you get a good one, then it can be really spot on.
Yeah. So before you go looking at training courses, and again, training courses tend to be advertised online, don't they? And they can be a bit of an impulse buy when you feel like you don't know something and you feel a bit hopeless for something and, oh my God, I don't know how to write SEO content.
And then you find a landing page that's 8,000 words with fake highlighted text telling you how if you just buy this ebook,
yeah,
then everything you write from then on will be perfect.
Yeah, don't fall for it. Don't go for the impulse buy.
Or at least try the free options first. It may be that you then go, no, do you know, I think I need something more formal. That's fine. But try the free things first.
Definitely, because as we've said, you know, Pip enjoys listening to podcasts, as we both do. YouTube videos, again, wikihowabout.com, Suite 101, Quora, as Pip suggested, Alison, OpenLearn. There are so many resources out there. So go
there
to them.
There really are.
If you're looking to save a bit of money, because there's loads and loads and loads of free stuff.
Yeah. Another area to save money is with dealing with your money, looking at how you manage your finance, looking at your bank account. Mm-hmm. Do you have one of those bank accounts where you have to pay £12 a month in order to get some weird deal that doesn't apply to you anyway, like free car insurance when you don't drive?
Yeah.
Do you have a bank account that's paying you interest? You know, are you paying over the odds for your bank account, or are you getting very poor interest rate? Do you have a separate savings account so that you can get better interest on at least part of your money?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have one of those weird accounts where you have to pay for direct debits, for instance, or something like that, where you end up, it looks like a good deal, but you end up paying so many random fees that it ends up ridiculously expensive? There's a lot to think about. In terms of the finance, do you want a separate business account, for instance?
Mm-hmm. Do you have an EISA? EISAs are a free way if you're trying to make some savings, and as a freelancer, you're going to be paying tax at the end of the year.
And you don't pay tax on money in an EISA.
No, you certainly don't. So make sure you can do it. If you have a registered or limited company, I'm not sure what the ins and outs of that are. I'm not sure if you can put money from your business into an ISA.
That's something to check with your bank or an accountant or somebody. Yeah.
But if it's from your personal account, which if you're just as a registered sole trader here in the UK, I'm not sure how it works elsewhere, then you can put as much money as you want into an ISA as long as it's under the limit, and it will tell you where the limit is.
Yes.
So you can merrily fill your ISA away and all that money is tax exempt, which is nice.
Absolutely.
In terms of other big financial commitments, when you pay for things online, such as your utilities, so your gas, your electric, your water, it can be really surprising and really annoying when you get to the final stages of an online payment and you find that the company website is implementing a service charge or a card fee. That's, say, £3, usually £2, £3, and that's been whacked on top of the overall price when you've just filled out all your information and you've done all the bits and bobs they wanted you to do. It's just super annoying. And the reason that companies do this, they might say it's admin processing fees, but the reason we all know they do this is because that they know you will pay.
Mm-hmm.
It's so annoying to get to the end of a transaction, as we say, and then abort it.
Very much so.
So if you're making like a one-off purchase on a website and you find that they've whacked a £2 fee on top of what you're already paying, you might think, go on then, who cares? And sometimes there is no way to avoid these kinds of fees. But for regular things like your gas, your electric, your water, you've really got no excuse. There's usually, if you have a nosy, there's usually a way to make a payment via your bank, whether that's a one-off payment or a direct debit. And that's still online if you've got online banking.
Yep.
It's just not via the website of the company you're buying from.
Yes.
And all right, you might think that, okay, £2-3 a month isn't a lot. But if you think about it in terms of a year, would you hand over £36 in one go just for the sake of not logging into your online bank?
Absolutely. And there's also the danger that you can look into every account you set up and choose the one with the best interest rates and the best everything and sign up for the gas account that's going to save you the most money, but then you're so disorganized that you don't pay your bills on time, and then you end up being charged £12 a day or something. It's as well as setting it all up well, you've got to maintain accounts in order to not, you know, risk all the money that you think you've saved.
And I think that applies to things like meter readings as well now.
Yeah.
Electricity companies will take an estimate
if you don't give them a meter reading, and they'll charge you for what they think you've used.
Yes.
If you do a meter reading and you find 2 minutes, that's all it takes. You just have to write down a number and type it in. It's very, very, very easy. I was scared at first because I don't like anything technical in meter reading. I was thinking, I don't know how to read meters.
It's literally a number.
It's literally a number.
Yeah, the only number on the thing. So yeah. You're all right. Look for the number and it's that.
It's that. You put that in and it's almost invariably cheaper because you only pay for what you've used. You don't pay for an estimate. And of course they're going to estimate high because they rely on customers' laziness or bad organisation to scrape a few pounds more off you every month. And it's just not worth it.
I've noticed a couple of my utility companies offering me discounts if I go paper-free.
Mm-hmm.
So if I just get statements online, then I might save. It's something nominal, like £1 a month or something.
Yeah.
But if you're happy not having paper bills, then it's less junk to deal with through the door.
Yeah.
And it's another saving that can just add up.
This is it. And you can print off anything that you get online. There are printable versions of all your bank statements and your details and things because banks have to make this information available. Everybody mm-hmm. needs copies of their bank statement. So even if you don't get it posted to you and you have to deal with a fiddly envelope and what have you, you can print off a PDF of your bank statements at any time. So it's worth going for it.
Yeah. Another thing to bear in mind on finances specifically is to try to have some savings
mm-hmm.
because freelancing isn't predictable. Mm. And even if you've had regular work, some places pay invoices really late. You might have another period with very little work coming in. So if you can start out with, I'd say, at least 3 months living expenses saved,
mm-hmm.
then you don't have to hit the ground running quite so much.
Yeah.
And once you're more established, I would recommend trying to have at least a month's living expenses saved at any given time. You want this to be accessible, I would say. Not one of these savings accounts where you have to request it 28 days in advance.
While you starve away at home.
Exactly. Like, that's good for long-term savings, but these are kind of backup savings that we're talking about, and I think that's different. You want instant access, but you can still compare accounts and get one with a good interest rate. But if it doesn't only cushion the blow of late payments and temporary lacks of work, it will also actually help you to stress a lot less when that happens
mm-hmm.
because there will always be ups and downs in freelancing and it's boring, but when things are going well and when the money's rolling in, do remember to stick some of it in a separate bank account for those more quiet times. And another thing to consider is credit unions.
Mm.
Now, these are usually run within... they're community-based,
mm-hmm.
and they are a way predominantly for poorer people to get access to financial services that they couldn't otherwise. And that's how they started out, as a way, basically, you can pay in regularly to your credit union account. And when you've been paying in for a certain amount of time, then you're allowed to request a loan.
Okay.
Which we're not talking thousands and thousands,
mm-hmm.
but for immediate difficulties, once you've paid in a certain amount for a certain time, they will loan you money and then you pay it back gradually.
Yeah.
And so the original idea was to promote financial accessibility, really, for people who didn't have access to it. But these days, although that's still the case, more and more people are signing up with credit unions as an ethical way to save money.
Yeah.
They are still generally community run. Mm-hmm. They are not investing in the arms trade or any of those things that the big banks do. They help people to be included in finance, but also they're a good way for anybody to save, and they're a good way for anybody to access small loans in the event they need one. So most towns and cities have credit unions, and so I would really recommend doing a search for a credit union near you and considering signing up.
What a fab idea. Mm-hmm. No, brilliant, brilliant idea, because a lot of freelancers that I speak to, particularly new ones, have gone freelance not out of a desire to be a freelancer, but out of necessity. Like, they may have
been pregnant,
or they may have had children and they're finding it difficult to get back into work.
Sure.
Often there's that slight overarching feeling of, I'm doing this because I have to and I need some money.
Yeah.
And supportive finance options like credit unions are just brilliant, because you don't need judgment when you're finding it difficult.
Yeah.
You want an ethical, supportive option that's going to give you reliable financial support, and a credit union's a brilliant way to do that.
Well, I think the best approach, and this is what I'm doing, is if you set up a credit union account, just then set up a standing order to put in £10 a month or whatever is, you know, whatever suits your own situation, and kind of forget about it.
Yeah.
And just let that, and then you've got a nice little pot of money, first of all, that you haven't accessed. And in the event you need a loan, you don't have to start setting up things with massive interest rates. Credit mm-hmm. union loans are very reasonably priced, and they're based on the savings you've already given.
And I think it's important to point out at this point that this is a far healthier, far less dangerous option than things like payday loans.
Oh, so much. I mean, in the UK at the moment, payday loans are rightly getting a lot of bad press.
Yeah.
But I know they exist all over the world.
They can be very tempting, can't they? That's why they do so well.
Exactly, as loan sharks do. And when people are desperate, they will do things that they wouldn't have done otherwise. And so if you've got access to a safe way to borrow a small amount of money, rather than borrowing a small amount of money on a 5,000% interest rate, and that's not an exaggeration, depressingly.
No, it's really not.
You know, it's the only way to go, really. And especially, I understand that banks are far more reticent about lending money since the financial crisis. And so fewer people have access to more reputable lending options. Yeah. So credit unions being so open and community-based are a good reason, good thing for many reasons.
They're fabulous. I mean, it's again, it's prevention rather than cure. Don't wait until you're desperate.
And even if you don't need a loan, then at the end of the year, if you've paid in £10 a month, then you've got £120 for Christmas presents.
Well, okay.
You know, it's however you end up using it is great.
Another way to save money for your business is to have a look at what you're forking out for travel costs. There are plenty of things when it comes to travel that you just don't need to pay.
Mm-hmm.
If you book your train tickets on the day, you're likely to pay far, far more than if you book them in advance.
Definitely. I went to London a couple of months ago, and I booked my train tickets about a month in advance. Mm-hmm. And even at that stage, looking at the different options, I was on one of these comparison websites, and looking at the different options, I managed to pay something like £12 per journey. But even a month ahead, there were other journeys that were just marginally different that were £50.
Wow.
And if you turn up on the day to go from the north to London, you can be paying in the hundreds.
Yeah, from Manchester to London on the day at peak time, you're looking at over £350 for a two-hour train journey.
That's quite incredible.
It's quite scary. I was really shocked when you said £12, actually, because that's the cheapest I've ever heard.
Yes, absolutely. I was shocked when I saw it, because it was nestled in the midst of all these 42, 36, 48. And then for both my journeys, there was just one at £12, so I thought, right.
No, it's fabulous. And one thing you can do, and I've saved my husband money on things like this before because I'm a little bit more financially savvy on little tricks like this, I think. I like to think, anyway. Is if you're going on a journey that stops at more than a few places. I think he was going down from Manchester to London via Birmingham, I think. If you book singles, if you book single tickets, say Manchester to Birmingham, Birmingham to London, London to Birmingham, Birmingham to Manchester,
that can sometimes be much, much cheaper than booking the whole thing in one go.
Yeah, I know to London and back from here in Sheffield, it's mostly cheaper to get two singles than to get a return, which goes against everything you think about train journeys, because I do other train journeys, say to Manchester, where it might be £12 single and £12.20 return.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so you get used to returns always being cheaper, but on slightly longer journeys, that's not necessarily the case.
Definitely, and sometimes you might have to have a bit of a fiddle around with one of these train journey finder websites.
Yeah, what if I went an hour earlier? What if I changed at a different place? It can really be worth it, can't it?
Yeah, if you're not pushed for time, go for a slightly slower journey. I enjoy train journeys. I put my headphones on and it's a break away from the laptop.
Yeah, watch the world go by. Go through the Yorkshire Moors. It's all, yeah.
Manchester to Sheffield is beautiful.
It's a lovely journey. Go right across the Pennines and it's, yeah.
I really miss it because I drive mostly, so I don't get to, well, I shouldn't get to watch the world go by. I should really be concentrating on that time. But no, it's lovely. And if you have a look at the journey that you're going to take, say Manchester to London, I know it's not a very good example because it's mostly a direct train. But if you're doing a long journey and there are several stops on your way, have a look, going back to the singles and returns thing, have a look if, say, Manchester to X and then X to London is cheaper, and have a look at Manchester to Y and then Y to London. Check different destinations along the way.
Yeah.
And one particular journey is not usually very popular. It'll often be cheaper.
Yeah. There's a website that is an incredible resource. It's UK-centric without doubt, but I'm sure a lot of the advice would apply internationally. And it's called Money Saving Expert.
Yes.
Yeah, and it's at moneysavingexpert.com, I think, but I will put it in the show notes, as
if
ever.
You'll find it immediately.
Yes. And if there is a way of saving money on something, it is on that website.
Yeah.
There's great content in the main body of the website, and then there's also the most extensive forum you can imagine, where people ask and answer questions. And it is so full of great information. The site does very well in the search engine results, partly because it's so populated with good stuff and partly because everybody links to it, because it's a brilliant site. It was started by a guy who previously worked for a credit card company, and he got sick of seeing how customers were ripped off.
Mm.
And so he came out of the industry and turned his knowledge into teaching people how to avoid excessive costs. And it grew from there, and the website is now huge. And it's a great resource.
It's totally, totally brilliant.
And it was Laurie talking about doing train journeys like that that reminded me of it. Because I know there are people who my brother was telling me about car insurance. You could, if you try slightly different variations, like say there are two drivers, try putting the other one in charge, or, you know, as the main driver, or all these different parameters that you can try, and people save hundreds of pounds. If they've got, say, an hour to spare to dedicate to doing this, you can save a lot of money.
And if you just phone the car insurance company and say, I'm not happy with this price, I've done it before.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't quite believe it's that easy, but often it is.
Yeah, I rang up my home contents insurance insurer when my renewal came through, and all I said was, is that your best price?
Mm-hmm.
And they instantly cut it by 2/3.
Ah.
Just like that. I didn't even have to say I've got a better quote from somewhere else.
Yeah.
I didn't bother with that. I said, is that your best price? And instantly he went, okay, we can offer you this. And it was a third of the original price.
My in-laws are Pakistani, and I think anybody who knows Pakistani people will know they can drive an extremely hard bargain. It's very true. It's one of those amazing things. And my Indian best friend is exactly the same. I think it's something in that part of the world that is just this feisty, winning attitude when it comes to getting money off stuff that you don't have to pay.
Yeah.
And my father-in-law phoned up his water company and they said it's going to be £80 a month, and he said, I've only got 40. So he only pays 40 a month.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is amazing. It's completely amazing.
Yeah.
And they've phoned him up occasionally and said, oh, your water bill's going to go up. And he's like, well, I haven't got any money to pay for it. And it's not true. He could if he wanted. But he knows that they're only upping the price because other houses in that area have all had prices increased. He's not using any more water. It's an arbitrary increase. And this is the thing. When you know that there's something completely pointless driving up the costs, all you have to say often is, I'm not paying that.
I've found
a different provider. They're offering me a better deal.
Yeah.
I can't pay that amount. Haven't you got a better offer? I've been with you 5 years. Isn't there any customer loyalty? Often just a little nudge, as Pip said, will drive down costs very, very quickly.
One of the main things I've learnt from Martin Lewis, who's the guy who originally started Money Saving Expert, is that being a loyal customer, you don't get any rewards at all.
Mm-hmm.
It's because they're busy rewarding the new customers to try and get them, trying to suck them in. And so actually changing companies is a bit more work, but often you'll get a much better deal, or telling your current company that you're going to change similarly, and actually just sitting and accepting every increase and accepting every quote. Does you no favours at all?
No, most big companies, say mobile phone companies, that's cell phone companies for the States, will have a retentions department.
Yeah.
So if you say to them on the phone, I'm going to leave, I'm going to go somewhere else, they've got a better deal, I've seen the deals you're offering to new people, why aren't I getting that, I'm not happy, generally they'll put you through to the retentions department. And retention is from retain. They want to retain your business. They want to keep you there.
And it really annoys me, actually. I left my former broadband supplier because they had... It's really frustrating. They had a limit on how much internet you could use. And for the first, 12 months of being with them, it was absolutely fine. I got nowhere near the limit. And then suddenly, every month, I was going over the limit and being charged extra. And I didn't know what I was doing that was using so much more bandwidth, and neither did they. And on top of that, they were throttling certain types of traffic, which was really annoying as well. And so in the end, I thought, right, this is costing me far more than it should because I keep getting these extra charges because I've gone over this arbitrary limit. And so I did loads of research. I found a better provider who could offer me faster speeds for less money, so I rang my ISP to cancel. And at that point, bear in mind that prior to this, I'd rung and said, is there any way I can change to a subscription that doesn't have this limit? And they said, no, that doesn't exist. And then when I finally rang to cancel, they said, well, we could offer you, for £4 extra a month, one that's unlimited.
That's outrageous.
And I just said, it's too late. If you'd offered me that the last time I phoned, I wouldn't be cancelling my contract with you now. However, you didn't, and so I'm going. I don't want it now. I wanted that 12 months ago.
I don't want it anymore. I'm going.
But yeah.
It's ridiculous. If you've got an unhappy customer...
Yeah.
I think most companies now recognise that that first nudge from an unhappy customer is the point that you cave and you say, right, it's a better deal, because most people don't even bother phoning up.
Yeah.
They don't realise they can push for a better deal.
Exactly. And so it does really annoy me when you get more the more you threaten to leave, because those people who don't want to make a fuss and just get on with things always end up losing out. And it's frustrating because I needn't have had all those extra charges, which were totally arbitrary.
No, they're pointless, weren't they? I remember you saying at the time, and you were paying a lot extra.
It was something like £10 for every extra 5 gigabytes. And 5 gigabytes, when you use the internet as much as I have to, goes quickly. And it was ridiculous.
One final little trick that we have for you in terms of saving money when you're forking out money is when you need to book a flight. Now, as we say, you might not be jetting all over the world for your freelance business, but everybody needs a holiday. And if you're a freelancer, you are your business. So we totally think this counts. When you are browsing a website for flights,
you can notice that you'll spot something, you'll note it down, you go, okay, maybe that works, that's not too expensive, that's okay, that's direct flight, that's where I need to go, that's what time I want, it's not 4 o'clock in the morning and 10 o'clock at night. You go to book and you find that in between times the flight has, so to speak, skyrocketed. You find that the prices have gone up in those 20 minutes that you spent browsing the site, and you think, damn, I've missed a deal. You haven't. This is what flight companies do. They recognize, using cookies, they recognize that you're browsing their site, and they increase their flight prices while you're on there. Now, the way to avoid this is to browse a website, note down the flight numbers that you are interested in, note down the companies that are providing them, and then click out of your browser window. Either go and clear your cache completely, clear your internet history, or go to private browsing, which a lot of browsers now allow. I'm not sure how to get into it, which kind of says good things for my internet history, I think. I'm not sure how to start private browsing, but it's very, very simple. Chrome's got it, Firefox has got it. I'm not sure about Internet Explorer, but being Internet Explorer, who knows?
Who knows?
Then if you use private browsing, or if you've cleared your cache, you go back onto the website, you click straight through to the flight that you want, and you'll notice that the price is usually back to the original price.
That is ingenious.
Isn't it just? It's
yeah.
Fabulous. It can save you hundreds of pounds at a time. And when you're off on holiday and you need a much-needed break, you know, if you've been working your bottom off as a freelancer and you really just need to get away, maybe on a short break, you don't want to be paying £500 for your flight and then have, say, £100 spending money left over for the 2 days.
Yeah.
If you get flights for £300, that's going to make a massive difference to the quality of holiday that you're going to have.
Or even if you're travelling to a conference or something.
True.
You still want to make it as economical as you can.
Absolutely. There's no point forking out. If you think about it, changing a browser window or not changing a browser window in that case can cost you or save you hundreds.
it's a no-brainer, isn't it, really?
It's so, so worth it. Just have a go next time and be outraged. Be really outraged, because it's outrageous.
So those are some good tips for some of those expenses that you can't avoid, and also some that you will at some point face and you need to be really careful with. And as we touched upon before, there can be issues. You can look for the best deal and find the best perfect thing and then completely let yourself down, frankly, by forgetting to pay within the 7 days and end up with a £12 fee on top of it. So actually staying organised, as well as helping you get through your work well, can actually have a good effect on your finances.
It absolutely can, and I was devastated when I learnt that. I was absolutely gutted, because naturally I'm really badly organised. I'm a really disorganised person. I have a great deal of difficulty. If I didn't have any help with it, and I'm going to go on to what sort of help I have, if I didn't have any help, I would have real difficulty keeping track of the bigger picture. Something's out of sight, it can be out of my mind when I'm working on a piece of writing, because I get my nose so far into a project that things like housekeeping and admin and finance, they can just float away into the clouds. I wouldn't notice because I've got my head in a dictionary.
Yeah.
Library fees, overdraft charges, late payment fees, sending invoices late, not chasing up invoices on time.
That's
all
a big
these
one.
Things, yeah, they can really add up. If you're waiting, going back to the invoice thing, if you're waiting for, say, 2 weeks, 4 weeks, 8 weeks, and you don't chase a client up and they've not paid you, that's your money sitting in their account.
A lot of people are quite happy to send off an invoice and then don't keep an eye on whether it's paid or not. Mm-hmm. And I've been guilty of this myself plenty of times. I send the invoice and then, yeah, it's kind of forget to check whether it's there or not, and then you lose track of which payments for which thing, and it can get really confusing. And if you get to the point where you're so confused that you don't understand what's been paid and what hasn't, then you might well not chase up an invoice, an unpaid invoice, ever.
Yeah, you might just let them get away with it, and they might not know that they've got away with it. There's often a disconnect between, say, the marketing department, who it's likely that you're dealing with, or the admin department, and the finance department accounts. So, yes, as a naturally extremely disorganized person, if I wasn't careful, this kind of disorganization could cost me a lot of money over the course of a year.
Mm.
What I do to combat this, and things have improved in my life so much since I got this under control a good few years ago now, but I rely heavily on a paper diary and on Google Calendar.
Yes.
Now, some people find they don't need both, especially with the addition of smartphones or iPhones. You know, you can sync your phone with your Google Calendar. So if you don't want a paper diary, that's another good way to do it.
I also use a combination of both. Some things are always in my Google Calendar and other things are very much on paper.
I think we're old school. I think we're kind of cool that way.
Yeah. Old school with a K, listeners.
Old school. Now, I use my paper diary for things that vary from week to week. So if I'm meeting somebody for coffee, or if I need to go and see a client over in Lancashire, or, you know, things like that. Yeah. And in my Google Calendar, there are regular commitments, and also going back to what you said, Pip, about chasing late invoices, when I make an invoice and I send it over to a client, I immediately put in my Google Calendar, on the date that that invoice is due to be paid, I put check payment.
That's a really good idea, to get that prompt, and you can...
Or a week after the payment date, because I don't like
chasing it. Yes.
I'll have to look if I've got... like a 30-day payment period, I'll have a look at 37 days forward in my Google Calendar and pop a note in there and say, X client payment due for invoice X.
Yeah. I also, if I get a long-term deadline, I might put in some reminders in Google Calendar so they pop up and say 2 weeks until you need to submit X, or 1 week until. The other thing is I have an add-on within Google Chrome that means that... Well, I have a few, actually. One means that my Google Calendar events literally pop up on my screen.
That's good.
And you can set how often in advance, when in advance you want that to happen, whether it's 5 minutes or a day or whatever. The other add-on that I have that's handy is one where you get an extra option within Gmail to add an email and its contents to Google Calendar. So if I get an email about an event, rather than copying and pasting everything, I just transfer it directly through a couple of clicks to Google Calendar because of that add-in.
What a good idea.
And I actually have another one where I can add...
Why am I not shocked?
It's all coming back to me now. But I can,
I'm techie.
I know, I can't help it. I can add Facebook events directly to my Google Calendar as well.
That's
just an extra option pops up on the event page.
Because the easier it is to add things to your Google Calendar, I forget about things. I sometimes now go to add something to my Google Calendar and find that I've already done it.
Yes.
Because I've got into the habit of doing it as I'm sending an invoice or as I'm making a deadline.
Yeah.
Same goes for library fees or payment fees or when things are due to be paid. If they've got overdue fees, stick it in your Google Calendar the day before.
And if you have... it's set up so that something pops up that you actually have to click to get rid of, then you can't ignore it, because it's easy, because we're so used to getting notifications all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, new email, new direct message on Twitter. It's easy sometimes to see something pop up and disappear and not really pay attention to what it was. Mm-hmm. So if you have to actively click to make it go away, it's more likely to go in.
I do this with my library books, actually, because I've always got loads of library books out. You know, I edit novels a lot of the time, so I'm always reading novels, which is lovely, frankly. The fact that I can say, I just need some more novels for my job. but sometimes, you know, our local library, has a three-week deadline. Now, I can't read 8 novels in 3 weeks. I could if I didn't have any work on, but, you know, if I've got other work. But I don't necessarily want to get rid of the novels. If I have them, I want to read them. So I'll pop a notice in my Google Calendar
that will tell me the day before they're due to become overdue. And then I'll just go to the library site after clicking away, because it's just another click, isn't it?
Yeah.
Go straight to the library site, click renew all, and Bob's your auntie. And I don't have to pay anything.
The libraries in Sheffield, for some reason, have stopped charging for overdue books.
Oh, how silly.
And I wish they hadn't, because my motivation then to get things back on time drops a bit.
I imagine a lot of books
stopped. And I get a bit lax now, because I think if it's a couple of days late, oh well, you know.
What are you going to do, Sheffield Council?
Exactly. And so, while I can see the reasoning, and they didn't want to impose financial...
It's a nice gesture.
It is, because they really... I guess they wanted to make libraries more accessible.
Sheffield are good with the ethics, aren't they?
Yeah.
Feel for that.
But in practice, even I wish that I would be charged sometimes, because then I'd get a lot firmer with myself about deadlines.
You go round to Sheffield libraries with your wrists up.
Please charge me.
My officers, I have your books.
And also, libraries, certainly here, and it sounds like in Manchester as well, I'm sure everywhere, are making much more of an effort to make the process easy. Like Laurie was saying, you can renew your books online. In Sheffield, there's increasing numbers of, it's like machines where you can return books by just scanning them in.
Slide them through, don't you?
Yeah. And so they make it easy to return things. So there are fewer and fewer excuses, frankly, for being late.
I'm still feeling the guilt there, Pip.
I am, but if they charge you, that's an extra reason to take advantage of these new technologies and get your books back on time.
Going back to our original point after our library diversion there, because we do like our library, support your local library.
Absolutely.
That's the message of the podcast. But if you are a week late with, say, 8 books, you could be looking at a £4 charge.
Yeah.
Now, imagine that you do that every month for a year. That's £48.
Yeah.
Just for not taking your books back on time and not clicking through to a website just to click renew all. It's super easy. You can even renew them when they're late to stop charges getting higher. Do it. It's so, so silly not to do it. So make sure you keep an eye on things like that. Generally, with anything that's overdue, the sooner you get to it, the better.
Don't get all head in the sand about it and think, oh, I'd be embarrassed to take it back now because it's late. Because that only gets worse over time. Deal with it now. If you've missed a payment to the gas company, ring them. Don't hide from them.
Absolutely. No, completely. And likewise, keep an eye on direct debits going out of your account. This is another point that we want to make. If there's money leaving your account every month for things that you don't use, so Netflix membership, gym membership, and you've not been for 3 months, a postal book club, a cookery club, a magazine that you don't read anymore, and there are 3 copies of it lying there in your post pile that you haven't checked.
Yeah.
Whatever it is, make sure that you get your money's worth or you downgrade and cancel as appropriate and as soon as possible.
I was guilty of this until recently with my landline phone.
Right.
Where I had this super duper deal where I could get all these free calls and and all this stuff, and I never use my phone. I keep my landline because people call me on it, but I don't make loads of phone calls at all. I do most of my communication either online or by text message. Mm-hmm. And so I was paying these super duper prices for this super duper deal that I just wasn't using. So I rang them up and...
On your landline?
On my landline. And I'd signed up for like a period of time, but there was about 6 months left of it. Mm-hmm. So I said, I understand there'll be a penalty if I cancel early. What would the penalty fee be? Mm-hmm. So she looked it up and it was equivalent to 1 extra month of this deal.
So a saving of 5 months.
Well, exactly. So I thought you could look at that as paying a month when you're not getting the service. But I wasn't using the service anyway. Mm-hmm. So I thought it's either 1 extra month or 5 extra months. So I said, okay, I'll cancel. And now I've got the bare bones
Yeah.
You know, I have a landline. I can make calls. I think my evening and weekend calls are free. Yeah. But I've
and
got the most...
You seem to survive. You seem to still be here.
That's it. And I'm paying considerably less.
Yeah.
And it's made no difference to me at all. The only reason I was paying more was because this deal that... I did used to use my landline a lot more. Mm-hmm. And so I did make use of it, but then I got lazy, and when it came to time to renew it, I didn't get round to cancelling before the renewal started, basically.
No.
And so I just got lazy, and it's easy
that
to get
happen,
yeah, it's easy to get into that position where you don't get round to doing it within a period of time, and then you're suddenly in your new contract.
Yeah.
But even if it's going to be a penalty fee, which they will say, oh, there'll be a penalty, ask how much it is. Because if it's like my situation, it's well worth it.
Yeah. I mean, we did the same, although there wasn't a penalty fee, we did the same with Sky Movies. We had Sky Movies for ages because it was like, oh, well, we both like movies, we both watch movies, but we weren't watching much of what was available, and what we were watching was the pay-per-view stuff.
Yeah.
And as bad as it sounds, it's just the box office stuff. But we had a look at Netflix, and we're paying, like, £5 or £6 a month.
Yeah, I'm loving Netflix at the moment.
I love Netflix. It's lovely. And I cannot believe, although of course I can, that we didn't look into it sooner.
Yeah.
Because the faces are massive, and that's what they rely on, isn't it? That you get comfortable.
Exactly. You get complacent. You get used to paying it. And speaking of back to direct debits that Laurie mentioned, what I do is I have... two bank accounts that are my main kind of day-to-day bank accounts, and one of those is where all my direct debits and standing orders go from. And so I know roughly how much each month is always going to go out of that account.
Mm-hmm.
And so I always keep it topped up so there's a bit more than that amount in there.
Yeah.
And then with my other main account, that's the one I use for shopping and cash and all that stuff, and I know I can safely use the money in that account because my bills are all covered in my second account. And for me, that works much better than having one account that manages it all, because I used to do that and you're never quite sure if I buy this today, is there going to be a bill tomorrow that won't go out? And so for me, having two separate, just, you know, basic current accounts reassures me and makes sure that I've always got enough for the direct debits and the regular bills.
That's a really good idea. I work most of my finances, my personal finances, from one account.
Yeah.
And although I'm in a lucky enough position that I'm not low on money at any point in the month at the moment.
Yeah.
But there's still that frisson of fear, isn't there, when you've transferred some across to a savings account or, you know, you've had a bit of a quiet month. That feeling of, oh my goodness, I'm at the supermarket.
Yeah.
Is my payment going to go through? That never goes away. And I think if you genuinely are a little bit low on money, it's a really good way to just take that fear away and to know what you've got. And if you know what you've got, you know what you can deal with and you know what savings you need to make and you... Again, it's this awareness of the situation that's always, always better to know. It's always, even if you've only got 50 quid in your account, if you've got less than 50 quid in your account and you've sectioned off, say, 100 for your direct debits and your bills, at least you know you're not going to get yourself into a sticky situation where you've got no money or you're going overdrawn and you're paying an overdraft charge.
Yeah, nothing goes out unexpectedly of the account that you spend from.
Yes.
So if it's in that account, you can spend it.
Yeah.
And by working out the kind of roughly average amount that goes out in bills and pay, I always pay in just more, just a bit more than that, then you also feel confident that your rent's going to be paid and your insurance is going to go out and whatever else. So,
because it's not a joke, is it? You know,
no.
Will you get overdraft charges and late payment fees? You can lose your home, you can lose your car, you can lose your job, you can get your water shut off or your gas or your electricity. It's not a joke. And sometimes freelancing, going back to what I said earlier, freelancing is an option that people turn to sometimes when things have got a little bit tough.
Yeah.
When they can't find a job, when they're at the end of their tether, they realise that freelancing might be an option.
Yeah.
And this is the whole point of this podcast, is to stop you ending up in a real pickle.
Because you'll read online stories of direct sales copywriters who, you know, charge £30,000 for a sales letter. And you might think, well, I'm struggling to buy food.
Yeah.
You know, and I guess what we're saying is that that can happen too.
It's even normal. It's really common.
Don't think that you're doing it all wrong if you're struggling a bit, because everybody has dry periods. Yeah. And, you know, especially if you're starting out, getting yourself established can be hard. And so we know that not every listener is that direct sales copywriter getting 30 grand a week.
You know, it can be really, really tough. And freelancing can be an option for people who don't have a lot of money. So when you're starting out, it's really important to be careful. It's so important to be careful. And it's important to keep up those good habits. You can relax a little bit, of course you can. But keep up the good habits and you're less likely to find yourself in a position where you're in trouble again.
Yeah, yeah. Now, another thing to bear in mind is looking at things that you have to buy, but that you can certainly get cheaper than just going to your high street shop. So, first of all, always shop around. Now, the internet makes this so much easier. You don't have to. I remember the days of traipsing from shop to shop to see whether Argos or Index was selling that particular kettle you wanted for £5 cheaper. These days there are a million price comparison websites. You can go on Google Shopping. You can look on Amazon at the different prices that different sellers on there sell things for. Certain things like printer cartridges, for instance. Mm. Printer cartridges, as everybody knows, are ridiculously expensive. But there are ways to get good deals with them. One thing I do is this one particular stationery company here in the UK that often has a really good freebie if you spend £39 or more.
Mm.
And normally I wouldn't spend £39 in one go on stationery, but when I need printer cartridges and I know that buying a set of black and a set of colour, you know, could set me back £40, one of the things I always do is check that particular website to see what their current freebie is, because they can be really good things. And so that way I might pay normal prices for the printer cartridges but get a great freebie, like a digital radio or something like that. My latest was one of those fans that doesn't have the spinny thing.
Oh, one of those. Yeah, they're like invisible fans, aren't they?
Yeah.
I'm sure that's not the exact thing for them.
Yeah, and alternatively, if you don't want a freebie in particular, look at the million different printer cartridge websites and do some comparisons.
Yeah, remember that you're a business and that you can look on business wholesale websites.
Yeah.
Or, you know, business stationers. And going back to the freebie idea, if you don't want the freebie, pop it up on eBay.
Yeah, very true.
If you want it, make a fiver out of it, make a tenner out of it. You know, it's better than having it sitting there collecting dust.
Definitely. And, you know, in every other aspect of our life, most people do a bit of shopping around. So don't forget that just because it's business expenditure.
Yeah.
When I bought my printer, I compared I don't know how many websites. I decided on the printer I wanted and then found, and you can talk about like a £50 difference sometimes if you find a site with a good offer going on. So always check.
Yeah, and always ask yourself if you need to buy things like this. Now, going back to if you're short on cash, libraries have printers. There might be a corner shop that has a printer. If you don't need a printer, don't think that to be a freelancer, you've got to go out and get top-of-the-range printer, top-of-the-range scanner, top-of-the-range laptop, office equipment, paper, ink. If you can't afford it, work with what you've got.
And never, ever use your printer as a general photocopier. No. If you're teaching a course, for instance, for a day, and you've got worksheets to give out, print one and then take them to a local newsagent who will do it for 5p a page. If you print out 20 on your own printer, it will cost you far more in ink than that.
Absolutely. Completely. Now, moving on from
Buying without shopping around, buying brands, buying brand name products is another quick way to throw your money down the pan. It's true. It's another personal business crossover, you know, because you buy brands and you buy non-brands in every aspect of your life. But some brands are worth spending on.
Mm-hmm.
It might be food. It might be other items. Other brands, and I particularly think of medicine, they're exactly the same. They're completely the same as the bog standard supermarket brands. Like, over here, you can get paracetamol, you can get... It's not the same as in the States. I know in the States you can buy, like, a 500 pot of paracetamol, which is... what's it called in America?
Tylenol.
Tylenol, there you go. You can buy Tylenol in 500 packs. Over here, you can't. You can buy up to packs of 16.
You used to be able to, and I remember when it was banned, it was to prevent people spontaneously overdosing. And people were very sceptical because just thought, well, you'd just go from shop to shop and buy loads. But I think the point of it was the more spontaneous, I'm going to do it now, and then having a pot of 200 on hand.
Yes.
And so, when I was younger, you could also get those. It was just massive tubs of them.
Just huge tubs. And it's a good economy, as long as you're not feeling a little bit delicate in yourself, obviously.
And, you can buy a pack for 30p of 12, or you can buy a branded pack for £2.50, and it's a chemical that's identical in both of them.
It's absolutely the same in cold and flu medicines. You have a look, the active ingredients in supermarket own brand Max Strength cold and flu capsules are the same and indeed better. There's more of the active ingredient than the leading brand name over here in the UK, and they are about £3 cheaper. Per pack, and we're talking again packs of just 16.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a fair saving, to be honest.
Yeah, definitely. Another thing to look at is cashback type deals. There are various cashback websites. I use one called Top Cashback, but there are plenty where basically these websites gain an affiliate profit if you buy through their link, but then they share that profit with you. So if you want to buy something from Debenhams and you use your cashback site's affiliate link, then if they get £3 back from that sale, then you might get £2 of that, or £1.50 or £3 or whatever. And so with purchases you make, and sometimes the offers you get on the cashback sites can be very generous, like 10 or 15% cashback for purchases you make, it can start to add up. And even things like if you buy in a physical shop, then using a loyalty card and start building up points on that.
Absolutely. Or print your own vouchers. You know, you
get
that a lot, don't you?
Yeah.
You know, if you go to their website, they might have special deals on there. You might be able to print off a voucher, take it with you, and get 20% off. You know, it's worth it. It's absolutely worth it.
Yeah, yesterday I bought phone credit for my work phone from Tesco. I'm not promoting Tesco. Other supermarkets are available. I just happen to be in Tesco. But I got Tesco Club Card points on my phone credit purchase, but also I had like this triple points voucher, so I got like three times the amount of Club Card points on this £10 mobile phone voucher that I had to buy anyway, and that'll be about, it's only, you know, about 30p back, but still, again, it adds up.
Of course it does, over the course of a year.
Yeah.
That adds up hugely. And I, you know, you read quite often, I think there's a bit of a stigma with, like, vouchers for restaurants. And
people get embarrassed, don't they?
They do. But if you're embarrassed and you don't want to use vouchers for dates, for example, if you think that's not okay, I'm not going to go into whether it is or isn't. Obviously it is.
Yeah.
of course it is. Don't be silly. What's not romantic about saving money, especially when they can spend that saved money on chocolate for you?
Exactly.
But if you're going for a meeting with a client, so if you're having a meeting with a client in a cafe or a restaurant and you've got vouchers, the client's not going to be hanging over your shoulder when you pay.
Yeah,
if you pay.
And they might just think you're quite savvy. They might be impressed, even.
They might well be, but there's no shame in it at all. There's no shame in keeping your money rather than giving it away when you don't have to.
Of course.
Absolutely.
Now, given that we've covered so much ground on this topic already, what we want to do is split it into two separate episodes. What this does is gives us the opportunity to carry on in the depth that we've been talking and really make sure that we don't miss anything out, because this is a really crucial subject.
As we're talking about the subject of saving money and preventing your business from hemorrhaging money, so to speak, it's quite a sensitive topic, and we really do want to cover a lot of subjects that are going to be helpful to people who are perhaps struggling a little bit, especially when they start off into freelancing, which is, I think, what's contributed to our decision to split this episode into two, and as Pip says, go into some real depth on the money topics.
And so this gives you an added bonus to tune in 2 weeks' time when we complete this episode. So do make sure you subscribe so that you don't end up with just half a picture. You can subscribe by going to alittlebirdtoldme.podomatic.com, and all the subscription options are on there. So thank you very much for listening. I have been Philippa Willits.
And I've been Laurie Hartshorn, and we will catch you next time.